I come to you, as he said, I am a trained eurythmist, currently working as an educational consultant, and I am an experienced Waldorf educator. I have had the privilege of overseeing a grade school from nursery through eighth grade, around 300 children, meaning I needed to become proficient at clarifying my perceptions and responding to needs and helping parents and teachers come to what I call a compassionate space on behalf of the children. I have also been privileged to work as a resource specialist at the Rudolf Steiner College Bookstore here in Northern California. So forgive me if I become a little resource rich. I'd like to take us back to my early beginnings at Ohio State University, when I was handed the data, the materials that were gathered by observing children by Dr. John Bowlby, who's the founder of attachment theory. And back then, 35, 40 years ago, I watched how well-meaning, good-intended people were trying to understand how to predict and facilitate socially competent and creative adults through education. And then I found Waldorf education and began to work on my own faculties of thinking, cognition. For when one meets anthroposophy or spiritual science, one is gifted this invitation to reimagine what it means to be human. And you find your perceptions change, they clarify, or they magnify, but always through the heart. So I come with two minds or of two capacities. I can take a very technical document where a child has undergone testing for academic difficulties or learning differences, and I can translate it into a humanistic or holistic paradigm and help everyone come to the heart of the matter, which is the child, of course, and our own reflective capacity. When I began working with Eurythmy for You a year ago and working with the activity-based stress release and the high sensitive program, highly sensitive personality Eurythmy, I felt kindred interest. I discovered a very worthwhile paradigm where somehow we have an invitation to work as a group with adults, taking oneself in hand, doing eurythmy exercises, and challenging oneself through the overcoming nervousness lecture, and really taking oneself to task and then meeting together in a community. And in some ways, I felt that this is a very worthwhile paradigm for those experiencing trauma or stress, because we breathe between ourselves and the world in a safe place and with the blessing of eurythmy. I wanted to give us a chance, like we do in the Waldorf classroom, when we tell a story to a class of children, the first day they listen, like we all listened so deeply last week to Dr. Harald Haas. And then the second day, if you use a three-day rhythm, you give the children a chance to tell their own version of the story. And the children listen to each other, and they get to know each other's sort of personality, or just they enjoy that social space that's created. And by the third day, they distill it down to the essential, and you come to an agreed upon, or sometimes you keep it original, version that you put into your book, you bring it into the will. Along that journey, what you find is that the children develop an appreciation for belonging to a community. When we met during the weekly meetings of ABSR, I experienced so much capacity in listening to my friends, who many of which I see here, and thank you for coming and joining this conference. So I would like to open the space with a verse by Reverend Adam Biddleston, because we are going to do a little time travel. This is a verse for a journey. And then we will do a review of last week before we go into some resources. The caring angel of my life sets out with me and holds the thread, at peace among my fellow men and women. Noise and illusion threaten me, and yet the master of the loom is kindness, and at arrival, the warm angel waits. So if we just take a moment and remember last week, we had Dr. Harald Haas bring us an overview of trauma and his experience in working with trauma in a medical perspective. And I noticed at times some of us had experiences that were a bit abrupt. And I just want to bring some of that home to us. Out of my experience of working with children of many ages and many constitutional capacity, I really was touched, as you may have been, that trauma can be not predicted, but one can get a sense for who is predisposed to trauma by their vegetative dystonia or the condition of their vascular health or resilience. If we just ponder that for a moment, what does that mean? The seven life processes, as looked into by Dr. Dyson and Theodore, that you can access on YouTube, gives us a real key and an insight. And if you are fortunate enough to be home with your child or your children in the early years, these seven life processes are very fundamental as an insight and a key to how to be in the home life in a healthy way to build up the digestive forces. Remembering in the first 7 years, the etheric or the life body is born and ready for learning. Many, many have written and have spoken about the importance of rest for digestion, healthy environmental space, kindness. Everything you learned in kindergarten or from your grandmother or from your own longing to make a difference in your own life, if that was not the case for you. This helped me really reimagine and rethink, even in my own self, where do I recognize when I am stressed? And now, I have a greater appreciation for how important it is to rebalance no matter what it takes. Dr. Haas referred to what it takes to survive trauma of a complex nature, where you may have many stressors in early childhood, or acute trauma. I would like to take us through a very socially acceptable exercise known as SCOPE. And Teodor is going to show us, and it's translated into different languages, from the Somatic Experiencing International website, that at acute moments of trauma, when you notice in yourself or even in your children, accelerated breathing, go on, if you would please go right back for a moment. In the classroom or individually, you can first notice if a child becomes too overwhelmed, sometimes by their cheeks suddenly flush or grow rosy, or their eyes will dart, or they will look around for cues they have lost their center. Just a few indicators. But just get to know yourself for a moment and consider accelerated heart rate, or when your breathing shallows and you can deepen it, slow down. Social avoidance, your thinking may become erratic, your muscles tense, you get heavy, you start speaking fast, you feel numb and restless. Dr. Haas also reminded us that trauma needs convalescence or recovery time. Sometimes it can be an instant to be reminded, and sometimes it means a true convalescence of a long period of time, deep rest for recovery. So let's just go through a few things, obviously, that you can do. The first would be to actually feel your feet. Slow down. And we took steps in the exercise. We can go back to that slide for a moment. If you actually feel frightened, take yourself to your feet and feel your feet. Take a few steps slowly and consciously send yourself down to your feet. And you will notice, oh, I didn't realize I'm standing on my heels or my four balls of my feet. And bring yourself to your center and allow the life to flow. Just like we learned from Mertha, when you cross your arms and connect yourself, sometimes take your arms around your whole body in a true embrace and go into what we know as a child's pose and lower your head and curl into a place of safety. Sometimes when we're online and we get a little overstimulated, this is also a good time to orient and look away and really focus on something in the distance or elsewhere and gaze on something that is of nature and is of the senses. It is very easy to get caught up in the abstraction. When you notice tension, find a place that is relaxed and pendulate or rock gently. And if you can find someone to engage with, and make sure you have a support system. Even if it's someone that you text back and forth with to check in with, or I'm going to suggest calling to your heart and mind those you know who may not be here on earth anymore, but who know you and love you. And they are very, very available and ready to be of assistance. So to engage with yourself and the world. Thank you, Theodore. Time is going very fast, so I'm going to go a little forward. And I'd like to share one thing that is crucial for anyone working with trauma for oneself or with another. And as we know, it's common sense. But out of the relationship space where you feel comfortable and safe, and you want to revisit an event that happened that may have affected everyone differently, which it typically does, it's important to go there relaxed, to allow your whole self to embrace the experience. And if you are not relaxed, let yourself pendulate, let yourself come back to your center. You know, we have two ears and we can only hear one thing at a time. And when trauma happens, we are of two minds. We have a left analytical mind that wants to make sense of it and tell me what to do as quickly as possible so I can go there. And the right imaginative mind is saying, wait, there's more to the story. I would like to accompany you. I was there. Why doesn't anyone ask me what I saw? Says that right mind. The left mind, just tell me what to do. And we are in trauma. We break that bridge of the interpersonal connection and the connection between the mind and the heart. So when you think about the two ears and only really being able to focus on one thing, and the chaos that comes when we're in conflict, too many signals, too many meanings. And one finds, like Dr. Haas said, the center in the middle of the movement belongs to the heart. So those who work one-to-one with adults in trauma have typically found that to not tell the story over and over and over, which can make it worse, can exacerbate it, irritate it. But if you take a timeline and you say, this is when the trauma happened, from that moment to now, and you start to construct what has taken place and let it be negative, just but place it on a timeline so that the frontal brain, the executive function can create some orderliness in time sequencing. Just like in grieving, you find those negative memories, oh, they get placed, they get pictured, they get organized. You start to find around those memories, often there are also positive memories. You start to realize, because you create space for that cluttered time body, you start to create space for all that you could not pay attention to because your trauma self became in crisis. And of course, we believe nobody could possibly understand what I'm going through, while everyone else that was available or at the moment has probably the same story, but a different narrative. In some ways, all of this is what we practice in the Waldorf classroom, which has to do with breathing through movement, and through the story that is developmentally supportive of the child, of the human being, and building the social coherence or community, and then distilling it down so we can be let go and one can come to rest. And then there comes this lifting up of what was relevant and essential. And this can be a template for working with trauma as well. I once had a kindergarten teacher in a conversation tell a family that they really needed to do more chores together. That meant, please, please, please don't do the laundry for your family. Let your child help you do the laundry. Gather it and separate the colors and put it in different colored temperatures. And then there comes the place where you bring the basket into the family living room and you fold it and you sort it. And so the mother said, oh, that's easy. Yes, I can do that. I love doing chores with my family, right? So she went home and she came back the next day after trying it out with her child. And she said, oh my goodness, my child said, no, 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 mom, you don't understand. She was rushing through every aspect of this exercise. He says, you're going too fast. Mama, sit down, watch. And you can imagine the kindergarten teacher in his heart. He says, you watch me, I'll show you how. And he took one item and he held it up and he shook it out and he placed it down and he sort of smoothed it out, and then he gently folded it lovingly and reverently. And then he placed it, thinking of the person it was for. And the mother had tears in her eyes and she said, oh, of course, this is about building connection, not getting the chore done. And their life changed by the mother starting to pay attention to what the child had learned in the kindergarten. Slowing down is essential in trauma and in one's own awareness. So, given our time, I would like to offer you a story that may be a representation of what we experience in the nervous system, which we will just think of symbolized by the tree when it has been traumatized, when it has been startled. Every trauma, by the way, begins in startle. If you see it or feel it or not, you fall back into the nervous system. And typically, the counter to a traumatic event is aggression. You fall forward. I want to compensate the startle. And we are invited with this invitation to reimagine what it means to be human by practicing clarifying our perceptions, clarifying and steadying that which we see and hear and feel and know. Allow yourself to be a worthy reference point for all this chaos and activity. And it becomes multidimensional. Many more layers can be available for healing and for connection. So with this story, The Spirit in the Bottle, a Grimm's fairy tale over 200, 300 years old for the telling. Once Upon a time, there was a woodcutter who earned his living by cutting wood and valued sending his son to university. His son became a very fine student and was almost complete with his studies. When his father ran out of money and called him back home to help take care of him. The son quite happily came home to his father, and his father was getting ready to go out to cut wood. And the son wanted to come with him. The father did not want to trouble him, but the son insisted on joining him. So they borrowed an axe from their neighbor. When they went out into the forest, the father worked hard until the sun was high in the sky. And the father took a break and sat down for his rest at lunch. And the son said, "I'm not tired, I will go on." And the father said, "Oh no, do not trouble yourself. This is hard work. You'll make yourself too tired." But the son insisted. And out he went into the forest. And after a while, he saw a great big oak tree that looked like 100 years old and so grand that he wondered which birds and creatures lived in its branches. He heard a voice muffled in the roots of the tree. And he went over and he saw that there among the roots of the tree was a bottle, and the voice came from inside the bottle. "Let me out, let me out," it cried. The little young man was curious, and so he said, "Where are you?" And from inside the bottle, "I am among the roots of the tree. Let me out," he screamed. So the young man looked among the roots and pulled away the leaves. And there he saw something shaped like a frog jumping up and down inside the bottle. "Let me out," he exclaimed. Innocently, suspecting no harm, he opened the cork of the bottle. Out came a creature that rose as half as big as the tree, within seconds. This creature said, "I will cut off your neck. I will cut off your neck. That is your reward for letting me out." Now, the university student looked at this creature and said, "Not so fast. Who do you think you are? I'll have to consult a few people until I let you cut off my neck." With this, he said, "Do you know who I am?" "No, you tell me who you are." "Well, I am the mighty Mercurius. And your reward for letting me out of this bottle is that I cut off your neck." Now, this clever university student said, How do I know you are who you say that you are? And with that, he said, you show me you are who you say you are. Make yourself as thin as you came out and go right back into that bottle. Then I'll believe you. And with that, he very happily made himself as thin as possible and went back into the bottle. And of course, the young man put the cork back on the bottle. Hey, let me out, he cried. Let me out. I promise I will not harm you. And I promise I will give you a reward. With this, he wondered, maybe he will keep his word. And so he took a chance. I would say a calculated risk. He pulled out the cork, and the spirit became as big as he had the first time. And with this, he kept his word and handed the young man a poultice. A poultice. He said, you may take this poultice, and if you rub it on anything that has a wound, it will heal. And if you rub it on iron or steel, it will turn to silver. Very good, he said. Thank you so much. A deal is a deal. And off the spirit went. And the young man went back to his father, who was, of course, impatient. Where have you been? I have been worried. Don't worry, father. Let's get back to work. Into the forest they went. And the young man took the axe and he rubbed the poultice on the axe. And when he took the axe to the tree, what do you think happened? But it had turned to silver and it could not cut that tree, but softened. The young man took the poultice and he saw a gnash in a tree, a cut, and he took the poultice over to the tree and placed it on the bark, and it healed. Oh, he said, it's true what he said. Well, being a university student, one might wonder why he didn't tell his father everything, but he didn't. He said, we'll just have to go sell this axe. And home they went. Little humor, I would say. Home they went, and the father was beside himself. Now I'll have to buy a new axe. I, your father, will have to earn enough money to return a proper axe to our neighbor. That's okay. Go ask how much he wants for the axe that we have ruined. And the father said, I know already. He only wants one taler. The young man went to the goldsmith with the axe that had been ruined. The goldsmith recognized the silver right away and gave him 400 talers. The young man went home and said, look, father, I have everything we need and more. You pay the neighbor and I give you 100 talers. You will never have a need for the rest of your life. All is taken care of. And the young man took himself back to university and indeed watched over himself and his father for the rest of his life and told him everything as it had happened. Now, this story of the spirit in the bottle has been used by Jungian analysts, especially Dr. Arnold Mindell in Zurich, To help one appreciate the nature of the vascular vegetative system, our nervous system can sometimes get trapped. And sometimes when they are trapped, we can feel they want to explode when given the chance. And that often happens. But we can become sensitive to our own internal signals to notice when that happens, when the genie wants to pop out of the bottle, for Mercurius has not been recognized for who he is. This ability to expand and compress just think of liquid silver, the ability to express oneself or to hold back, this moderation, pendulation of what we say, when and how, and why, and when to wait. So when we sit with a trusted friend or therapist, or we become that for a child, or you work with story in the classroom or in your home life, and you build a timeline, being aware of that compressed energy of being misunderstood or seeing more than you wanted or having been hurt or shocked, and you create a space in the relationship to elaborate, to build a new picture of understanding from different perspectives, is what I have found to be like a kaleidoscopic heart. When you used to look at slides through a projector and you could focus in and focus out, and you could see how you can see different perspectives on the same event. I experienced in a beautiful way with the Eurythmy work together in this past year with Eurythmy for You, that when we come together and have conversation, we grow that capacity and then we come back home. And that has been very, very healing. And with this talk, I hope I can share my gratitude and invitation that you too may try to work with these classes. I think we are at the time for questions and conversation. And I just thank you for this chance to share a little bit of my experience.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you so much. Leading us towards our hearts and touching the mystery of time, which on one hand brings order, allows to discover things which have not been seen, and creates space. Space for encounter, or even what children can learn to teach their adults, huh? What they have learned from their teachers. But you touch some of this time becomes space mystery, I think. And Gudrun just mentioned when you wrote about, or when you shared the Grimm's fairy tale with us, that the father has learned how to wound, and the son, the counter movement, how to heal through an experience of death. Can you elaborate on this a little bit, what Gudrun shared? Do you see it the same way?
I'm finding the, you know, my, thank you, Gudrun. My experience now is that The father did not know how to work with the counter current. You know, the father did not know how to see the new forces, the newly arising forces in his son. The countercurrent, the experience of death, is to see things for what they are. That's my experience. That is really the perceptual. When you feel the flooding in of activity and you distance yourself, that is a true way of working with death in cognition, which the sun has perfected and can then heal. I wonder if that's what you are referring to. It's hard for me. German. I see she's written in German.
Yes, but I try to translate it. Another question Annette is asking, could a tick that the child develops be caused by trauma?
Yes.
How could we open up a space here for peace and order and security when children develop ticks?
Typically, one wants, as the adult, to pay attention to when they arise. Again, time. If you notice that they arise in a predictable way, let it be a warning or an indication that something preceded that impulse. And start to work with that. Let it be a message to you as the caretaker, as the adult. And I'm going to just say that oftentimes we see it as an alarm because you, for all many reasons, but I would check and see if the digestion is actually efficient. Do you understand? If the nutrition, if what they're eating and what they're taking in, if it's a sign of overstimulation or high sensitivity to something that they are eating, or they've had an experience that they cannot integrate. A tick isn't always forever. See if you can work with it by watching when it happens and going before in your memory. How to open a space for peace and order and security. How do you not react when your child gives you a warning or acts in a way that makes them stand out? That is really the task. So to educate, to slow down and ask the child, depending on the age, when do you feel this coming on? They may not even know what happens. So get to know the circumstances around the tick. That is what creates peace and order, is to become curious and slow down and monitor.
And M. Parker is asking, what place does high anxiety and chronic symptoms, such as teeth grinding, play in this process?
Again, depending on the age of the child, they're all a warning sign or an indication something has fallen out of balance. There are many here who are qualified to answer that question, but if you think of the polarity of the head and the belly, you think, how has my thinking process, how is the child's thinking process or trying to make meaning kind of overwhelmed the digestion? And how has the digestion maybe become something where they're not paying attention? This is the upper and the lower human. So you work with anything that allows you to expand and contract. I would go to that first exercise for startle, and see if together you can release that. We call this the starfish. This is just very basic. If you take your hands and you go ahead and cross them, and then you let yourself, you sit on a chair or a couch where you have a soft back, and you allow yourself to expand as far as you can, slowly and gently, until you come into that back space. Like Mehrta said, the forward and the back gets cramped with trauma or incapacitated. And you see if you can release. And then you slowly come into the forward space. We call that the starfish, where you expand, but very slowly, and contract. And you will notice if it's helping, if the child exhales. A deep exhalation. And sometimes that's when you want the cheeks to grow rosy, because you're trying to bring the metabolic into the nerve sense and create balance. And you do that a few times. And it's nice to do it perhaps before you go to bed or at a certain time during the day. That releases tension.
Matthias is asking, Judith, back to the fairy tale, that silver, what's the role of the silver in it? It's the middle element of the periodic table, he writes, but what role does play silver in trauma?
So ironically, I know from experience that when an elder person's skin softens and begins to break at different parts of the body from pressure wounds, silver, they weave a bandage of silver. It's called silver bandage. And then they have a silver salve that you put on it, and the skin will actually reweave. We know that silver is reflective and belongs to the moon. And so the role of silver, I would say, is in relation to the gold, is the regenerative forces, I believe, of the water element, as in quicksilver.
Who was it? The tension should not just go away, but how do you deal with tension? Because being without tension, that's also not the idea. So what kind of tension is the right tension to have?
Should tension...
Gudrun.
What was the last thing you said?
Gudrun was asking this.
Tension that is destructive. Is tension that has fallen out of balance. Tension that is wakeful. If you notice that there's not a response, or there's no longer a reciprocity, the relationship gets challenged. You notice a child no longer is responding. That tension needs integration, not to go away. It's all of it is informing us. So every single time I have a child, or I am discussing a child with a parent or a teacher, I always find something to slow down with, to slow down our observations and have a conversation about who is that child and why are they expressing themselves this way now? So that we become a compassionate community holding that individual for their karma, whatever that is. So yes, tension is good, But like a string on a cello, you can overtense and you can undertense, but you want the right tune. So we call that attunement. So we can have a true musical relationship where there's reciprocity. Yes, I agree. Thank you, Gudrun.
So that's becoming a musical question.
Huh? Yeah.
Is my instrument singing? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
So if you have no tension, you won't hear sound coming from your instrument. Yeah. Can you show the starfish more clearly is one wish from the audience. Just how would you do it and how often, and just show it to us once again, maybe that we can join in, Judith.
Let's try. Find yourself on the edge. On the edge of a chair, or if you want to be on the floor. I don't know about my computer. Let's do it this way. Sorry. Do it this way. Okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty surprised you.
Hello, my doggy.
How nice. How nice, Judith. Hello. What's his or her name?
His name is Kenai.
Kenai. Hello, Kenai. Let's do the starfish with you. Yeah, it's so nice to have animals around. They'd like you with me.
So we want to begin really just gently, just allow yourself to be at rest. And
maybe
take
the camera a little bit higher, Judith, that you can see your head better, a little bit better.
Yeah, a little higher. So here you are. And literally, you're going to open your legs so that they are out into an awe, and you're going to open your arms. Okay? But you monitor where you feel your center, and you just gently allow yourself to open like a starfish, as far back as you can, until you feel stress. And then when you're ready, you gently come back and you're crossing your hands and your legs, and you bring your head all the way down and rest on your knees. And one more time, very slowly, notice where your tension is. And stretch in this space. And when you come back, cradle your head to your knees. And come back to yourself and sit up gently and take notice. It becomes impossible to think or worry or stress when you are in that expanded position and when you are in movement and you bring that head to that cradling position, and the cranial sacral fluid gets a nice massage. Very simple. And very effective. It's also nice to do before meals.
And you crossed your legs, huh, when you curl in.
Cross your ankles. But your head comes to your two knees. You're not crossing your knees.
And how often do you do that?
It's nice to do it about 3 to 5 times. And it engages the rest and digest capacity to drop down into that belly. And yes, it can hurt. And when you find yourself with your shoulders stressed, you go ahead and relax them and feel your power. One more very simple exercise is to place your hand on your brain stem at your back, cradle your head, and just place your other hand on your right near under your collarbone. And you open that circuit and you find your breathing can deepen and slow. And your body will be grateful. Yes, Claire, it is the startle reflex in infants. Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Which we recognize that when we are in trauma or stress or crisis, the early reflexes come back no matter how old you are. And so it's good to remember, but as you get older, slow down to integrate those reflexes and then come to quiet so that the silver in us, the nervous system, can get an impression that felt correct. You understand? That felt right. And thank you. Oh, dear, clever mind, for giving me a space to also belong, because our minds run away from our bodies quite often in trauma and stress.
And how did you call the last exercise, Judith? And when I did it, I stretched a little bit and felt very well by stretching, but you did not stretch. What would you recommend?
What happened for you was what? That's the gift of trauma. You know, when you come to a place of a restorative or corrective emotional experience, somatic experience, the body will do what it needs. And you went, I feel light in my upright. So that's the gift of the somatic activities. When you slow down and invite oneself to come home, and then you see, oh my goodness, I had no idea that that child was stressed until we went here. So slowing and inviting home, inviting one home.
So in a way you say, go to archetypal principles and follow your intuition.
Yes.
Yeah. Judith, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing from your rich experience and even showing two so wonderful exercises.